Out of the Silent Planet, continued. Every visible creature in the grove had risen to its feet, and was standing, more hushed than ever, with its head bowed, and Ransom saw, if it could be called seeing, that Oyarsa was coming up the long lines of sculptured stones. Partly he knew it from the faces of the Malachandrians as their lord passed them. Partly he saw, he could not deny that he saw, Oyarsa himself. He never could say what it was like. The merest whisper of light, no, less than that, the smallest diminution of shadow, was travelling along the uneven surface of the groundweed, or rather some difference in the look of the ground, too slight to be named in the language of the five senses, moved slowly towards him, like a silence spreading over a room full of people, like an infinitesimal coolness on a sultry day, like a passing memory of some long-forgotten sound or scent, like all that is stillest and smallest and most hard to seize in nature. Oyarsa passed between his subjects, and drew near and came to rest, not 10 yards away from Ransom, in the center of Meldilorn. Ransom felt a tingling of his blood and a pricking on his fingers, as if lightning were near him, and his heart and body seemed to him to be made of water. Oyarsa spoke, a more unhuman voice than Ransom had yet heard, sweet and seemingly remote. An unshaken voice, a voice, as one of the Hrossa afterwards said to Ransom, with no blood in it, light is instead of blood for them. The words were not alarming. What are you so afraid of, Ransom of Thulcandra? It said. Of you, Oyarsa, because you are unlike me and I cannot see you.
Those are not great reasons, said the voice.
You are also unlike me, and, though I see you very faintly. But do not think we are utterly unlike. We are both copies of Maleldil. These are not the real reasons. Ransom said nothing. You began to be afraid of me before you set foot in my world, and you have spent all your time since then in flying from me. My servants saw your fear when you were in your ship in heaven. They saw that your own kind treated you ill, though they could not understand their speech. Then, to deliver you out of the hands of those two, I stirred up a Hanakra to try if you would come to me of your own will. But you hid among the Hrossa, and though they told you to come to me, you would not. After that I sent my Eldil to fetch you, but still you would not come. And in the end your own kind have chased you to me, and Hnahu's blood has been shed. I do not understand, Oyarsa. Do you mean that it was you who sent for me from Thulcandra?
Yes.
Did not the other two tell you this? And why did you come with them unless you meant to obey my call? My servants could not understand their talk to you when your ship was in heaven.
Your servants? I cannot understand, said Ransom.
Ask freely, said the voice. Have you servants out in the heavens?
Where else? There is nowhere else.
But you, Oyarsa, are here on Malachandra, as I am.
But Malachandra, like all worlds, floats in heaven. And I am not here altogether as you are, Ransom of Thulcandra. Creatures of your kind must drop out of heaven into a world. For us, the worlds are places in heaven. But do not try to understand this now. It is enough to know that I and my servants are even now in heaven. They were around you in the skyship no less than they are around you here.
Then you knew of our journey before we left Thulcandra?
No.
Thulcandra is the world we do not know. It alone is outside the heaven, and no message comes from it. Ransom was silent, but Oyarsa answered his unspoken questions.
it was not always so. Once we knew the Oyasa of your world. He was brighter and greater than I. And then we did not call it Thulkandra. It is the longest of all stories, and the bitterest. He became bent. That was before any life came on your world. Those were the bent years of which we still speak in the heavens, when he was not yet bound to Thulkandra, but free, like us. It was in his mind to spoil other worlds besides his own. He smote your moon with his left hand, and with his right he brought the cold death on my Harandra before its time. If by my arm Maleldil had not opened the handramits and let out the hot springs, my world would have been unpeopled. We did not leave him so at large for long. There was great war, and we drove him back out of the heavens and bound him in the air of his own world, as Maleldil taught us. There doubtless he lies to this hour, and we know no more of that planet. It is silent. We think that Maleldil would not give it up utterly to the Bent One, and there are stories among us that he had taken strange counsel and dared terrible things wrestling with the Bent One in Thulkandra. But of this we know less than you. It is a thing we desire to look into. It was some time before Ransom spoke again, and Oyasa respected his silence. When he had collected himself, he said, "After this story, Oyasa, I may tell you that our world is very bent. The two who brought me knew nothing of you, but only that the Sorns had asked for me. They thought you were a false Eldil, I think. There are false Eldila in the wild parts of our world. Men kill other men before them. They think the Eldil drinks blood. They thought the Sorns wanted me for this or for some other evil. They brought me by force. I was in terrible fear. The tellers of tales in our world make us think that if there is any life beyond our own air, it is evil." "I understand," said the voice. "And this explains things that I have wondered at. As soon as your journey had passed your own air and entered heaven, my servants told me that you seemed to be coming unwillingly, and that the others had secrets from you. I did not think any creature could be so bent as to bring another of its own kind here by force." "They did not know what you wanted me for, Oyasa, nor do I know yet." "I will tell you. 2 years ago, and that is about 4 of your years, this ship entered the heavens from your world. We followed its journey all the way hither, and Eldila were with it as it sailed over the Harandra. And when at last it came to rest in the Handramit, more than half my servants were standing round it to see the strangers come out. All beasts we kept back from the place, and no Hanahu yet knew of it. When the strangers had walked to and fro on Malakandra and made themselves a hut, and their fear of a new world ought to have worn off, I sent certain Sorns to show themselves and to teach the strangers our language. I chose Sorns because they are most like your people in form. The Thulkandrans feared the Sorns and were very unteachable. The Sorns went to them many times and taught them a little. They reported to me that the Thulkandrians were taking Sun's blood wherever they could find it in the streams. When I could make nothing of them by report, I told the Sorns to bring them to me, not by force, but courteously. They would not come. I asked for one of them, but not even one of them would come. It would have been easy to take them, but though we saw they were stupid, we did not know yet how bent they were, and I did not wish to stretch my authority beyond the creatures of my own world. I told the Sorns to treat them like cubs, to tell them that they would be allowed to pick up no more of the Sun's blood until one of their race came to me. When they were told this, they stuffed as much as they could into the skyship and went back to their own world. We wondered at this, but now it is plain. They thought I wanted one of your race to eat, and went to fetch one. If they had come a few miles to see me, I would have received them honorably. Now they have twice gone a voyage of millions of miles for nothing, and will appear before me none the less. And you also, Ransom of Thulkandra, you have taken many vain troubles to avoid standing where you stand now. That is true, Oyasa. Bent creatures are full of fears. but I am here now and ready to know your will with me. Two things I wanted to ask of your race. First, I must know why you come here. So much is my duty to my world. And secondly, I wish to hear of Tholkandra and of Maleldil's strange wars there with the Bent One. For that, as I have said, is a thing we desire to look into. For the first question, O Yarsa, I have come here because I was brought. Of the others, one cares for nothing but the sun's blood, because in our world he can exchange it for many pleasures and powers. But the other means evil to you. I think he would destroy all your people to make room for our people, and then he would do the same with other worlds again. He wants our race to last for always, I think, and he hopes they will leap from world to world, always going to a new sun when an old one dies, or something like that. Is he wounded in his brain? I do not know. Perhaps I do not describe his thoughts right. He is more learned than I. Does he think he could go to the great worlds? Does he think Maleldil wants a race to live forever? He does not know there is any Maleldil. But what is certain, O Yarsa, is that he means evil to your world. Our kind must not be allowed to come here again. If you can prevent it only by killing all three of us, I am content. If you were my own people, I would kill them now, Ransom, and you soon. For they are bent beyond hope, and you, when you have grown a little braver, will be ready to go to Maleldil. But my authority is over my own world. It is a terrible thing to kill someone else's Hanahu. It will not be necessary. They are strong, O Yarsa, and they can throw death many miles and can blow killing airs at their enemies. The least of my servants could touch their ship before it reached Malakandra while it was in the heaven and make it a body of different movements. For you, no body at all. Be sure that no one of your race will come into my world again unless I call them. But enough of this. Now, tell me of Tholkandra. Tell me all. We know nothing since the day when the Bent One sank out of heaven into the air of your world, wounded in the very light of his light. But why have you become afraid again? I am afraid of the length of time, O Yarsa. Or perhaps I do not understand. Did you not say this happened before there was life on Tholkandra?
Yes.
And you, O Yarsa, you have lived, and that picture on the stone where the cold is killing them on the Harandra, is that a picture of something that was before my world began?
I see you are Hanahu after all, said the voice. Doubtless no stone that faced the air then would be a stone now. The picture has begun to crumble away and been copied again more times than there are Eldila in the air above us. But it was copied right. In that way you are seeing a picture that was finished when your world was still half made. But do not think of these things. My people have a law never to speak much of sizes or numbers to you others, not even to swords. You do not understand, and it makes you do reverence to nothings and pass by what is really great. Rather tell me what Maleldil has done in Tholkandra.
According to our traditions, Ransom was beginning, when an unexpected disturbance broke in upon the solemn stillness of the assembly. A large party, almost a procession, was approaching the grove from the direction of the ferry. It consisted entirely, so far as he could see, of Frossa, and they appeared to be carrying something. Chapter 19. As the procession drew nearer, Ransom saw that the foremost Frossa were supporting three long and narrow burdens. They carried them on their heads, four Frossa to each. After these came a number of others armed with harpoons and apparently guarding two creatures which he did not recognize. The light was behind them as they entered between the two farthest monoliths. They were much shorter than any animal he had yet seen on Malakandra, and he gathered that they were bipeds, though the lower limbs were so thick and sausage-like that he hesitated to call them legs. The bodies were a little narrower at the top than at the bottom, so as to be very slightly pear-shaped, and the heads were neither round, like those of Hrossa, nor long, like those of Sorns, but almost square. They stumped along on narrow, heavy-looking feet, which seemed to press into the ground with unnecessary violence. and now their faces were becoming visible as masses of lumped and puckered flesh of variegated colour fringed in some bristly, dark substance. Suddenly, with an indescribable change of feeling, he realized that he was looking at men. The two prisoners were Weston and Devine, and he, for one privileged moment, had seen the human form with almost Malachandrian eyes. The leaders of the procession had now advanced to within a few yards of Oyarsum and laid down their burdens. These, he now saw, were three dead frotha laid on biers of some unknown metal. They were on their backs, and their eyes, not closed as we close the eyes of human dead, stared disconcertingly up at the far-off golden canopy of the grove. One of them he took to be Hjoy, and it was certainly Hjoy's brother, Hjahi, who now came forward, and after an obeisance to Oyarsa, began to speak. Ransom at first did not hear what he was saying, for his attention was concentrated on Weston and Devine. They were weaponless and vigilantly guarded by the armed Hrossa about them. Both of them, like Ransom himself, had let their beards grow ever since they landed on Malachandra, and both were pale and travel-stained. Weston was standing with folded arms, and his face wore a fixed, even an elaborate, expression of desperation. Devine, with his hands in his pockets, seemed to be in a state of furious sulks. Both clearly thought they had good reason to fear, though neither was by any means lacking in courage. Surrounded by their guards as they were, and intent on the scene before them, they had not noticed Ransom. He became aware of what Hjoy's brother was saying. "For the death of these two, Oyarsa, I do not so much complain, for when we fell upon the Hmana by night, they were in terror. You may say it was a hunt, and these two were killed as they might have been by a Hanakra. But Hjoy they hit from afar with a coward's weapon, when he had done nothing to frighten them. And now he lies there, and I do not say it because he was my brother, but all the Handramit knows it. And he was a Hnakrapunt, and a great poet, and the loss of him is heavy." The voice of Oyarsa spoke for the first time to the two men. "Why have you killed my Hnau?" he said. Weston and Devine looked anxiously about them to identify the speaker. "God," exclaimed Devine in English, "don't tell me they've got a loudspeaker." "Ventriloquism," replied Weston in a husky whisper, "quite common among savages. The witch doctor or medicine man pretends to go into a trance, and he does it. The thing to do is to identify the medicine man and address your remarks to him wherever the voice seems to come from. It shatters his nerve and shows you've seen through him. Do you see any of the brutes in a trance?" "By Jove, I've spotted him." Due credit must be given to Weston for his powers of observation. He had picked out the only creature in the assembly which was not standing in an attitude of reverence and attention. This was an elderly cross close beside him. It was squatting, and its eyes were shut. Taking a step towards it, he struck a defiant attitude and exclaimed in a loud voice. His knowledge of the language was elementary. "Why you take our puff-bangs away? We very angry with you. We not afraid." On Weston's hypothesis, his action ought to have been impressive. Unfortunately for him, no one else shared his theory of the elderly Hross's behavior. The Hross, who was well known to all of them, including Ransom, had not come with a funeral procession. It had been in its place since dawn. Doubtless it intended no disrespect to Oyarsa, but it must be confessed that it had yielded, at a much earlier stage in the proceedings, to an infirmity which attacks elderly Hnahu of all species, and was by this time enjoying a profound and refreshing slumber. One of its whiskers twitched a little as Weston shouted in its face, but its eyes remained shut. The voice of Oyarsa spoke again. "Why do you speak to him?" it said. "It is I who ask you. Why have you killed my Hnahu?"
"You let us go, then we talky-talky," bellowed Weston at the sleeping Hross. "You think we no power, think you do all you like. You no can. Great big headman in sky, he sends us. You no do what I say. He come, blow you all up. Poof, bang."
"I do not know what bang means," said the voice, "but why have you killed my Hnahu?" "Say it was an accident," muttered Devine to Weston in English. "I told you before," replied Weston in the same language. "You don't understand how to deal with natives. One sign of yielding and they'll be at our throats. The only thing is to intimidate them."
"All right, do your stuff then," growled Devine. He was obviously losing faith in his partner.
Weston cleared his throat and again rounded on the elderly Ross.
"We kill him!" he shouted. "Show what we can do! Everyone who know do all we say, poof, bang, kill him same as that one. You do all we say and we give you much pretty things. See? See?"
To Ransom's intense discomfort, Weston at this point whipped out of his pocket a brightly colored necklace of beads, the undoubted work of Mr. Woolworth, and began dangling it in front of the faces of his guards, turning slowly round and round and repeating,
"Pretty, pretty, see? See?"
The result of this maneuver was more striking than Weston himself had anticipated. Such a roar of sounds as human ears had never heard before. Baying of Frosser, piping of Pfiffeltriggy, booming of Sorns, burst out and rent the silence of that august place, waking echoes from the distant mountain walls. Even in the air above them there was a faint ringing of the elder voices. It is greatly to Weston's credit that though he paled at this, he did not lose his nerve.
"You no roar at me," he thundered. "No try make me afraid. Me no afraid of you."
"You must forgive my people," said the voice of Oyarsa, and even it was subtly changed. "But they are not roaring at you. They are only laughing."
But Weston did not know the Malacandrian word for laugh. Indeed, it was not a word he understood very well in any language. He looked about him with a puzzled expression. Ransom, biting his lips with mortification, almost prayed that one experiment with the beads would satisfy the scientist. But that was because he did not know Weston. The latter saw that the clamor had subsided. He knew that he was following the most orthodox rules for frightening and then conciliating primitive races, and he was not the man to be deterred by one or two failures. The roar that went up from the throats of all spectators as he again began revolving like a slow-motion picture of a humming top, occasionally mopping his brow with his left hand and conscientiously jerking the necklace up and down with his right, completely drowned anything he might be attempting to say. But Ransom saw his lips moving and had little doubt that he was working away at "pretty, pretty." Then suddenly the sound of laughter almost redoubled its volume. The stars in their courses were fighting against Weston. Some hazy memory of efforts made long since to entertain an infant niece had begun to penetrate his highly trained mind. He was bobbing up and down from the knee and holding his head on one side. He was almost dancing, and he was by now very hot indeed. For all Ransom knew, he was saying, "Diddle, diddle, diddle." It was sheer exhaustion which ended the great physicist's performance, the most successful of its kind ever given on Malacandra, and with it the sonorous raptures of his audience. As silence returned, Ransom heard Devine's voice in English.
"For God's sake, stop making a buffoon of yourself, Weston," it said. "Can't you see it won't work?"
"It doesn't seem to be working," admitted Weston, "and I'm inclined to think they have even less intelligence than we supposed.
Do you think, perhaps, if I tried it just once again, or would you like to try it this time?"
"Oh, hell," said Devine, and turning his back on his partner, sat down abruptly on the ground, produced his cigarette case, and began to smoke.
"I'll give it to the witch doctor," said Weston, during the moment of silence which Devine's action had produced among the mystified spectators.
And before anyone could stop him, he took a step forward and attempted to drop the string of beads round the elderly Frost's neck. The Frost's head was, however, too large for this operation, and the necklace merely settled on its forehead like a crown, slightly over one eye. It shifted its head a little, like a dog worried with flies, snorted gently, and resumed its sleep. Oyarsa's voice now addressed Ransom.
"Are your fellow creatures hurt in their brains, Ransom of Thulcandra?" it said. "Or are they too much afraid to answer my questions?"
"I think, Oyarsa," said Ransom, "that they do not believe you are there. And they believe that all these Tanahu are like very young cubs. The thicker man is trying to frighten them and then to please them with gifts."
At the sound of Ransom's voice, the two prisoners turned sharply around. Weston was about to speak when Ransom interrupted him hastily in English.
Listen, Weston, it's not a trick. There really is a creature there in the middle, there where you can see a kind of light or a kind of something, if you look hard. And it is at least as intelligent as a man. They seem to live an enormous time. Stop treating it like a child and answer its questions. And if you take my advice, you'll speak the truth and not bluster.
The brute seemed to have intelligence enough to take you in anyway, growled Weston.
But it was in a somewhat modified voice that he turned once more to the sleeping cross. The desire to wake up the supposed witch-doctor was becoming an obsession, and addressed it.
"We sorry we kill him," he said, pointing to Huey. "No go to kill him. Sorns tell us bring man, give him your big head. We go away back into sky. He come," here he indicated Ransom, "with us. He very bent man, run away, no do what Sorns say like us. We run after him, get him back for Sorns, want to do what we say and Sorns tell us, see? He not let us, run away, run, run. We run after. See big black one, think he kill us, we kill him. Poof, bang, all for bent man. He no run away, he be good, we no run after, no kill big black one, see? You have bent man make all trouble, you plenty keep him, let us go. He afraid of you, we no afraid.
Listen." At this moment, Weston's continual bellowing in the face of the horse at last produced the effect he had striven for so long. The creature opened its eyes and stared mildly at him in some perplexity. Then, gradually realizing the impropriety of which it had been guilty, it rose slowly to its standing position, bowed respectfully to Oyarsa, and finally waddled out of the assembly, still carrying the necklace draped over its right ear and eye. Weston, his mouth still open, followed the retreating figure with his gaze till it vanished among the stems of the grove. It was Oyarsa who broke the silence.
"We have had mirth enough," he said, "and it is time to hear true answers to our questions. Something is wrong in your head, Anahu from Thulkandra. There is too much blood in it. Is Firakitakila here?"
"Here, Oyasa," said a piffle trig.
"Have you in your cisterns water that has been made cold?"
"Yes, Oyasa."
"Then let this thick Anahu be taken to the guest house, and let them bathe his head in cold water, much water and many times. Then bring him again. Meanwhile, I will provide for my killed Hrossa."
Weston did not clearly understand what the voice said. Indeed, he was still too busy trying to find out where it came from. But terror smote him as he found himself wrapped in the strong arms of the surrounding Hrossa and forced away from his place. Ransom would gladly have shouted out some reassurance, but Weston himself was shouting too loud to hear him. He was mixing English and Malacandrian now, and the last thing that was heard was a rising scream of, "Pay for this! Poof! Bang! Ransom, for God's sake, ransom! Ransom!"
"And now," said Oyarsa, when silence was restored, "let us honor my dead Anahu."
At his words, 10 of the Hrossa grouped themselves about the biers. Lifting their heads, and with no signal given as far as Ransom could see, they began to sing. This book is continued on cassette number 6, side 1.